Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
By definition, a storyteller conveys events in words, images, and sounds, often by improvisation or embellishment. The Living Bread Radio Network presents The Storytellers with Tony Agnese. Today, you'll hear a faith-based, inspirational story that's both heartfelt and heartwarming. And now, let's meet today's storyteller with Tony Agnese.
Hi, this is Tony Agnese, and welcome to this edition of The Storytellers. We're heard every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, with a repeat every Sunday at 9 a.m. here on the Living Bread Radio Network. The program is available as a podcast immediately following the program at 2:30 at thestorytellersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcast, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn Radio. And then later in the week, it's available at the Catholic podcasting site, breadboxmedia.com. Our program is sponsored in part by CatholicBook.net, and all of the books featured here on the program are available through CatholicBook.net. Each week on the show, we feature a guest and discuss their personal journey of faith and their ministries, and they share as authors, speakers, bloggers, or radio hosts, and today's no exception. Deacon Greg Kandra is my guest. His blog is one of my favorites. It's called The Deacon's Bench. He's an award-winning broadcaster, award-winning author, and his new book is entitled The Busy Person's Guide to Prayer, and I'm sure that rings true to just about everyone listening to the program today. Deacon Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
You know, everybody kind of, you know, one of the things I hear all the time from people, and I bet you do too, is, you know, tell me about your prayer life, and they go, I'm too busy to pray. I remember a story. I think this is a Mother Teresa story. She's with some bishop, and they're having a conversation, and he's bemoaning the fact that he's so busy doing all of the different duties that he has to do. And he says to her, you know, sometimes I'm even too busy to pray. And Mother Teresa, Saint Mother Teresa now said, when you're too busy to pray, you're too busy. And I always found that for myself to be to be a little bit of a guide. You hear that blown back at you, Deacon Greg?
I mean, especially now, we live in such a frantic time, and everybody is so overscheduled. And particularly if you have a family, you're pulled in so many different directions, and people just don't make prayer a priority anymore. Mm-hmm. And they feel like, you know, if they're going to pray, they have to set aside X number of hours a day or something to make it happen. And part of the purpose of the book was to sort of, you know, break that myth and to make people realize that there's always time to pray and that there are always opportunities to pray. You just have to be aware of them.
Mm-hmm. I know if I leave for work in the morning and drive, I'm exactly one chaplet of Divine Mercy from my office. And I actually know if I'm at a certain decade, I know if I'm at the corner of certain streets, I know if I'm on time or late for work. It's amazing.
You know, I'm getting ready for Easter and the Easter Vigil and singing the Exultet at the beginning of the Easter Vigil. Mm-hmm. And I can just about sing one Exultet from leaving my home to arriving at church.
That's
how I time my life.
It's a perfect time. And that's kind of the, I guess, kind of the idea that, you know, finding time to pray, and you don't have to kind of block out an hour and kneel by the side of your bed. You know, we talk about praying continuously, and obviously that doesn't mean, on your knees 24/7. But what it does mean is it including God in your day, right, in terms of prayer?
Yeah, and it's really having the right attitude, and an attitude in which everything that you do and everything that you are is a prayer that you are offering for the greater glory of God in one way or another. And like you say, it doesn't have to be, you know, being on your knees 24/7. You can, you know, I use the example in my book of Brother Lawrence, who used washing dishes in the refectory of his monastery as a way of prayer. We can turn almost anything into a prayer with the right attitude and the right purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. I'm always interested in our program, The Storytellers, is about people and how they get to where they are. Give us a little bit about a background of your life growing up and what, eventually brought you to the point where you decided the diaconate was for you.
Well, I grew up outside Washington, D.C. In Rockville, Maryland, and I'd always had a great love for reading and writing, and I majored in journalism at the University of Maryland. And very soon after I graduated, got a job working for CBS News in Washington, and eventually got married and came up to New York, where I started working as a writer and producer for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And I, had the most amazing career and worked with some of the most amazing people in broadcasting, both television and radio. And I would not say that I was a serious Catholic, but I was, a pretty good Catholic. I did my part to go to church every Sunday and do all the things that we're supposed to do. But my faith was never really a big priority to me until, the turning point in my life really was September 11th, 9/11, 2001. And working at CBS at that time was such an intense experience, and being in New York when that happened was so intense, and realizing that everything that I had and everything that I had worked for, all the ambitions that I'd had in my career and my life, could be gone in an instant. Mm. And I really got a sense for the first time in my life, I think, just how fleeting life is, and really made me question what I was doing and why I was doing it. And it really drew me back more deeply into my faith and made me think more deeply about how I was living my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and eventually I ended up making a retreat to a Trappist monastery down in Atlanta, and I met a deacon there. And in talking with him and watching him minister and seeing him at the altar, I said, something just spoke to me and said, that's what you should be doing. And in a matter of months, I had applied for and had been accepted into the diaconate program up here in the Diocese of Brooklyn.
Well,
I was ordained in 2007, and here I am.
And that's got to be quite a decision. Interestingly enough, in the 70s, I did a Curcio at the Trappist monk at the Trappist monastery there in Atlanta. So I was working in Atlanta at the time in radio. You grew up in a family that was Catholic. They went to Mass and did things. And did this decision, was it to jettison this very successful career you have and go in a totally different direction, or did you kind of do them in parallel as you were studying for the diaconate?
Well, I continued working at CBS, and that was interesting. You mentioned Mother Teresa. One of the things Mother Teresa used to say to people whenever they would show up on her doorstep in Calcutta to try and minister to the poor, they would come from all over the world. And she would say to them again and again, you don't need to be here. Find your own Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many ways, CBS was my Calcutta. It was the place where I ministered in many ways during my formation and in the early years when I was first ordained. I tell stories all the time of people, including Katie Couric, who would ask me about what my life was like as a deacon and what did I do. And I came in one year on Ash Wednesday with a little container of acids and sent out an email to dozens and dozens of people that I knew around the building. And I said, I have ashes. If you'd like to receive them, I'm going to be up in this office. And there were about 30 people who came to receive ashes from me, including the president of CBS News, Sean McManus. So it was a great opportunity in a lot of ways to witness to my faith and to bring a little bit of Jesus into a world where you might not expect to find him.
Right. There's a ministering in your workplace is an issue that sometimes isn't met with the greatest of acceptance. Did you find any pushback in that at all, or was it were you particular as to how you did it?
Asked me that a lot about whether I experienced any kind of discrimination or even persecution, and I have to say no. Most of the people that I worked with at CBS were very accepting and very tolerant and actually very encouraging of my vocation. And the executive producer of 60 Minutes wrote me a recommendation letter when I applied for the diaconate. And they were always very curious about what I was doing and why I was doing it. And I think for a little while, I was sort of the Catholic expert in the CBS newsroom whenever anybody had a question about something happening in the church. They would ask me, what does this mean? Is this important? You know, is this something we should look into? So that was interesting, and I think that might be surprising to a lot of people. When I was at CBS and I left in 2008, the atmosphere was really very supportive and encouraging.
You know, the idea that we can all, you know, we're all called by the Great Commission to evangelize, and oftentimes people are extremely reluctant to do so in the workplace for fear of being accepted. Well, would they be accepted? And it's interesting that in what we would think might not be the best of atmospheres that you were able to do that. And we're all called to do that in a way, to share our faith.
Yeah, you know, I was preaching this morning at a parish out in Queens. They were having morning prayer for Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday. And I talked about how we are called to witness our faith and to tell our story. One of the points that I was making is that over these 3 days, we really tell the Christian story of Christ's passion, death, and resurrection. And I was challenging people, how do we tell our story in our daily lives? And I told about a woman I met when my wife and I were on a pilgrimage in the Holy Land, and she had just gone through RCIA. She was a brand new Catholic. And I asked her, what was it that made you want to become Catholic? And she said it was her boss. Her boss was Catholic, and she saw how he treated his family and his coworkers and his employees. And she said he was the most decent, loving, wonderful human being. And she said he had this light in him. And she said, I wanted what he had. And if we can live our lives like that, what a beautiful form of evangelization. If we can inspire people to want what we have as Christians.
And you don't even have to use words, huh?
No, yeah, exactly. You know, the greatest witness, the greatest evangelization can be with our lives.
So 9/11 was kind of not necessarily a turnaround for you, but a deepening of the desire to do more, get more, learn more, and be able to share that faith?
Yeah, it really made me think more deeply about who I was and where I had come from. You know, when I was a kid, I had been an altar boy, and I had thought for a little while, like we all do, about being a priest. And then I discovered girls, and you know, that was the end of the end of that. God had other plans for me. But it really made me think more deeply about my faith. And one of the people I discovered, which is how I ended up at a Trappist monastery, was Thomas Merton. And reading the Seven Story Mountain was an eye-opener for me. And really, I saw a lot of myself in him and the journey that he had made and the questions that he had asked. And it really touched me and made me want to learn more. And I think really pushed me down the road.
Well, I first came in contact over the internet with Deacon Greg through your blog, The Deacon's Bench. How did that all come about? And I know you've been writing for a long time, but how long have you been blogging? And did that lead to writing books, or were you doing both at the same time?
Well, I started the blog right around the time I was ordained. I took a couple weeks vacation, what I called my deacon moon, after I was ordained, to spend a lot of time just being a church rat and hanging around the parish and assisting at Mass and really getting into the role of being the deacon. And at that time, I was working for CBS. I was the editor of Katie Couric's blog, Couric & Company. So I knew a little bit about blogging and the internet and social media. And I had discovered in the course of my formation before I was ordained that there were not really any blogs out there by, for, and about deacons and the diaconate. So I decided sort of on a spur of a moment to try and start one on my own. And so I found a web page where you could create your own blog, blogger.com,
mm-hmm.
and created the Deacon's Bench, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate to be nudged along in this by a good friend of mine, Elizabeth Scalia, who you may know as the
sure.
anchoress.
Yeah, the anchor. Yeah.
And she was very encouraging. And at the beginning, she and I were the only ones who were reading this, but she started linking to me and letting other people know about it. And eventually it just sort of caught fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed it for a long time. It's a great blog.
Well, thank you.
Deacon Greg Kandra is my guest. In the next segment, we're going to zero in on The Busy Person's Guide to Prayer. I know you're busy out there, but come back and be with us here on the next segment of The Storytellers.
Support for The Storytellers is provided by CatholicBook.net, serving the Catholic community for 30 years with books, Bibles, gifts, and more. CatholicBook.net is safe, secure, and simple to use. Just a few clicks and your purchase is delivered right to your door. CatholicBook.net, for 30 years, a commitment to service.
This is Tony Agnese, and welcome back to The Storytellers. My guest on the program today is Deacon Greg Kandra. Deacon Kandra is the author of the book, The Busy Person's Guide to Prayer. Deacon Greg, this title struck me immediately because everybody seems like they're too busy to pray, and I'm sure that was kind of the genesis of this. Tell us a little bit about how you came to decide that this was a direction you wanted to go with the book.
Well, it's kind of funny because the idea really wasn't mine. I was approached by the publisher, Word Among Us Press. They sent me an email. I had never really had any dealings with them before, but they knew me through my blog. And I guess they decided, we want to do a book about prayer for busy people, and who's the busiest person we can think of? How about Deacon Greg? So they sent me this email, and they said, you know, we've been getting a lot of inquiries from people. Do you have a book for people who are too busy to pray? And we decided this is something that there's obviously a need out there, and we should try and meet this. And they approached me, and they said, would you be interested in doing this? And I'd been approached by people before about doing books, and being a busy person, I always said, I really don't have the time. Thanks, but no thanks. But this idea really sort of captured my imagination, and I thought maybe this is something that I am called to do, being a busy person as I am, and maybe there is something here that I can work on, pulling from my own life and my own experience and from people I know. So we hashed out an outline and some ideas, and praise God, back in March, this was published and is now out there. And I do think it addresses something intrinsic to our times. You know, we're so overscheduled and so overcommitted. Where can we find God in all of this? Mm-hmm. And I hope that this book, in some small way, answers that question.
This idea of time famine, huh? We just, you know, you wish there was an extra hour or two in a day to kind of squeeze it all in, and things like a prayer life kind of get left behind. Some of the people I've talked to, the hardest thing for them is getting started, and I know you have a whole chapter on getting started. Did you find that with most of the people you talk to, that just getting started is the hardest part?
Yeah, a lot of it is focusing, and a lot of it is making it a priority. I think I make the point in the book that to pray, all you really need is to want to, because if you want to do it, you will, and you can make it happen. And it's committing even just 2 or 3 minutes at the beginning to turn your mind and your heart to God and say, God, I'm going to give you this little bit of time. And I put little prayers at the end of each chapter to help give people some guidelines and some ideas if they can't find the words to pray. And there's an appendix which has short prayers in the back for people who, you know, prayer may be unfamiliar to them, to help them find their way that way also.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, start small in little tiny bites, and eventually you can build up into something more.
Mm-hmm. Most of us, and I know you mentioned it in the book too, most of us get an introduction to our prayer life as kids, where we learn, you know, the Our Father and the Hail Mary and the Glory Be and the Apostles' Creed and so forth. And oftentimes people who try to have a prayer life as an adult kind of go back to that as a starting point, but there's so much more, and it doesn't have to be complicated. Talk a little bit about that, about the prayers we memorize versus just the prayer from the heart.
Yeah, that's something that I do try to pull out in the book, is the importance of just speaking from your heart. And I quote Saint Therese of Lisieux. Teresa of Avila, who said that prayer should be like a conversation with a friend. And take that moment, that time, whatever time you have, to have that conversation with God. God, this is what is in my heart. This is what is weighing on me. This is what I'm thinking. And just try to express that as openly and as honestly and as simply as possible. And I also spend some time in the book encouraging silence to make prayer less of a monologue and more of a dialogue,
mm-hmm.
so that you listen to what God is trying to say in your heart. And I can speak from my own personal experience. That silence that I experienced in the monastery when I was on retreat is one of the things that guided me into my vocation, listening to what God was trying to say to me and what was stirring in my heart and the way that he was trying to point and direct my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be transformational if you're just open to it and willing to give the time and attention to it. And it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a lot of effort, but it begins with the desire to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And that still small voice that's in all of us, you kind of really have to quiet down to hear it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I encourage people, find one quiet corner where you can go away, even if it's just going into the bathroom and closing the door, to, you know, make that your space and your time.
Mm-hmm. There's a kind of a sense that with a lot of parents of young people, and I'm sure there are many parents that are listening, of, you know, a saying grace before a family meal, or that little prayer you might say in the morning, or a prayer before you go to bed. Those early morning and late night prayer might be replaced with the office at some point, if you go beyond things. That kind of baseline prayer thing, Greg, in launching from that, is something, is that a valuable way to think in terms of starting out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it can be so important to start with kids when they're young and to build up this habit and this feeling of prayer and of holiness. I opened the book with my own memory of my mother teaching me to pray when I was just 3 or 4 years old. And that memory is something that stayed with me and grounded me. And if you can give that to kids and give them that baseline,
mm-hmm.
it can mean so much. And praying together as a family can mean so much. It regularizes it. It makes it a part of their lives and a very powerful memory that I think they'll carry with them and hopefully continue and pass on to their own children.
The, you know, as a years as a broadcast consultant before I got too old to continue to do it. I would be in the car an awful lot or in airplanes an awful lot. And I would always start my trip in the car with the, you know, the angel of God. And I found that that praying in the car was something I keep. I always keep a dozen finger rosaries in the console and one in my drink cup. And I found that praying in the car, especially, you know, you're traveling, let's say, a 5-hour drive to a client and you're tired of everything that's on the radio and you kind of shut it off and you pull out the rosary. And it just seems to me to be the perfect kind of setting to pray. And you're finding time in what you do on a daily basis. You kind of make that moment. You could sit there and continue to listen to the same song over and over again that's playing on the radio, or you might turn that into a situation where you can pray. Finding those times during the day, I know, is important.
Yeah, and I talk about this a little bit in the book of my own experience on the subway in the morning going into work and seeing people of all faiths and many faiths praying. You would see women with rosaries in the morning on their way to work, or people with Bibles, or people reading the Magnificat, or you would see Jewish men with the copies of the Torah and Muslims with the Quran and all these, this wonderful mixture of different faiths that you see and experience in New York, all within the bounds of just one subway car.
Mm-hmm.
Many people, I think, do find that time when you're on the way to work and there's nothing else to do. They find that opportunity to make a moment of prayer.
Mm-hmm. Just simply saying grace before meals in my family situation is something that almost becomes, you almost don't eat unless you do it. It becomes tradition almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a bunch of guys that I have breakfast with after daily mass, and we have a different place we go every day. And one day we're in a particular restaurant, and we always say grace before we eat. And one particular day, this was after many months of doing that, one of the waitresses came over and approached one of the guys and said, "I know you guys are all priests or ministers or something, but can I talk to you?" And ended up sharing some and asking some advice from one of the guys sitting there. It does, when people see people praying, it does increase some curiosity, doesn't it?
I think it does. And I think it touches people. It bears witness to something that we don't see very much in this world anymore. And I think so many of us now do have memories of being taught to pray when we were younger, and it brings all that back, and it reminds us of what's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, the book is entitled The Busy Person's Guide to Prayer. My guest, Deacon Greg Kandra. The book, if you think you're too busy to pray, you read this book, it'll give you all sorts of opportunities and ways to do it. And what I like is that the chapters have some prayers right at the, you know, some things you can try out, some things you can do and modify if you wish. And it really is a nice guide. And Deacon Greg, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. As I said earlier, I'm a fan of your blog and really enjoy reading what you write each week. And thank you so much for being with us, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
And that's our show for today. My thanks to Deacon Greg Kandra, author of the book, The Busy Person's Guide to Prayer, for being with us. If you miss part of the program, it re-airs this coming Sunday at 9 a.m., and it's available right now at thestorytellersradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, YouTube, and TuneIn Radio. This is Tony Agnese. We'll see you again next week for another edition of The Storytellers.
We hope hope you've enjoyed today's edition of The Storytellers with Tony Agnese, a production of the Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio. To learn more about today's storyteller, go to thestorytellersradio.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast and hear all of our past shows. And join us again next week at this same time for The Storytellers with Tony Agnese.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.